Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you, like the rest of America, are looking to move down here to the Tampa Bay area in Florida and you want to work with a realtor who knows the area well, then make sure you reach out to Ann at West Florida Real Estate. Ann has sold over 350 homes here in the Bay Area over the last 6 years. She's smart, she's lived in the area for 16 years, and you won't find anyone around with a better work ethic. Reach out to her at Ann with an E at westfloridarealestate.com and let her know you heard about her here on Everyone Loves Guitar. That's Ann with an E at westfloridarealestate.com. For information on advertising, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. And if you're enjoying the show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Hey, everybody, it's Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar. We got a really cool guitar player out of Nashville, sort of. Out of Nashville. We're with Greg Forsman. He's originally from Louisville, Kentucky. You know what? I'm from New York City, and when I was a kid, I'd call it Louisville.
Well, and I think you were more correct, probably.
Oh, really?
Well, it's named after King Louis of France.
Oh, okay. Louis.
Not King, Lua.
Lua. Louisville. Louisville. By his early teens, Greg was consumed with playing guitar and finding like-minded people to jam and form groups with. He played at backyard parties and school dances. By the time he was 14, moved into nightclubs at 16, and started touring on the road at 18, fresh out of Central High School. For the next 10 years, Greg played mostly cover music in clubs throughout the Southwest and Midwestern states. Although with the help of his trusty Porta studio, he was always writing songs and working on ways of getting the songs down on tape. And this period was highlighted by the Hammerheads, which was a hard-rocking Southern funk group that tore up the I-65 circuit from 88 to 92. The Hammerheads also released a self-titled CD called Live in 92. After the Hammerheads broke up, Greg soon became an in-demand touring guitarist in Nashville, where he had moved in 88, and he also began the Greg Forsman Band in 1993. Since then, he's released 5 studio albums and a very popular live collection available for free on his website, which is gregforsman.com. That's F-O-R-E-S-M-A-N. And he and his band have also carved out a respectable and loyal following in their corner of the world by playing live shows as often as their schedules allowed. And Greg joined Martina McBride's touring band in 1997, and he's been around the country and all over the world with Martina and company many times over. Greg says he owes Martina a debt of gratitude because she's kept him on for all these years, and plus it's allowed him to do his own thing as well. And I think, as everybody in the music business today says, man, if you could make a living playing music and do what you like, and you're doing something right. So Greg's also become an in-demand Nashville session player over the years. Man, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Greg.
Thanks for having me, Craig. I think we're done now.
Yeah, that was the bell. Time is up. Hey, man, what prompted you to move to Nashville in 88, and what were you doing musically like at the time when you moved?
Okay, well, that's a good question, and the answer is as long as you want it to be. I think I realized I was in a band, like I said, when I was in my teens, that was a really good, precocious band. And we all thought we were going to make it. And I'm holding up my fingers to make the quote unquote make it sign, because we all know that that's just a dream that you have when you're a kid. But anyway, when that band broke up, I knew that I had to go to somewhere else if I was going to do anything extraordinary. And me and a friend actually rented a car and drove to LA, you know, when I was about 21.
Very cool.
And just spent a week out there. And I didn't really care for it out there. It's something, you know, on a guttural level did not appeal to me about Southern California. So then I went back home, and about a year later, I just bought I had a credit card, and I bought a plane ticket to New York City, because that's another place. For me, it was either LA or New York. Mm. I didn't really consider Nashville, because Nashville was Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers to me, and I didn't have all that much interest in that.
Sure.
So I bought a plane ticket. I had a friend that lived in New York, and I went up there and visited him and stayed in Manhattan for a few days, and really didn't care for that either. It didn't seem like someplace I wanted to try to move to. Hmm. So I just went back to Louisville and worked. You know, back then you could put a band together and play covers and work, you know, 4, 5, 6 nights a week. And then after a few years, this band that I was in, we fired our booking agent, fired our manager, and hired a guy out of Nashville. So we started going down there and spending time in Nashville, and we started getting exposed to all these really, really cool musicians that have been hugely influential to me to this day. People like Pat McLaughlin and Mike Henderson, and people that outside of Nashville, people haven't heard of these guys, but they're just great.
Yeah.
They're great. And they're in the blues. They're in blues.
Mike's
rock.
A blues. Yeah. Mike's. Well, yeah. Blues guy. Yeah.
So I should, you know, at that point I said, yeah, this is where I want to be.
Very
so
cool.
I moved down here.
Funny how well, one thing I give you, you were pretty, I want to ask you, you said that I knew that I had to go someplace else if I wanted to become successful.
Correct.
That wasn't a word used, correct. But what, so you were looking beyond. So where'd you get that drive? You always had that or?
Yeah. Yeah. I was always pretty driven to do something. I remember there was a guy that I used to study with in Louisville that I studied jazz with. His name was Jeff Sherman. And I kind of looked at him and I said, well, you know, he does pretty well. He drives a nice car. He lives in the nice end of town. But, man, he teaches all day, every day, and gigs 3 or 4 nights a week playing music that I don't really think he wants to. He was kind of my example of what you had to do if you were going to be successful there. But I didn't want to do.
Sure.
You know, of course, you know, I don't think it was about becoming a rock star, but I wanted to make great music.
Sure.
And be recognized and make money for it.
Yeah.
Know? I've always had the drive to do that.
That's great. You know, I think it's so, especially with music, I've come to learn through interviewing so many people that I would say it's like literally impossible to do the one without the other, to make shitty music or your perception of shitty music and be successful. You know, if you're not doing something you like, then music is too much of a should be a vulnerable thing where you're sharing a part of yourself, you know, and if
it should be.
You've been with Martina since 97, man, that's 21 years as her lead guitarist on the road.
Yeah.
First, congratulations. That's like 170 years and like every other profession or something like that. How'd you first get the gig with her? And I was curious what kind of changes have taken place over that time frame as it relates, you know, to your role, her team, her touring situation.
When I first got the gig with her, I was actually playing with another artist. I was actually kind of in, you know, when I quit that band that I was in, the Hammerheads, we were playing bars. And, you know, when you're playing bars, you're doing 50 weeks a year. You're working all the time. And when I quit doing that and I started working with country stars, and the first country act that I worked for was Deborah Allen. I was with her for a couple of years. But those people tend to, from time to time, they'll take 6 months off. So you have to find something else to do for a living for sometimes a few months. And I worked for a remodeling company. I worked to learn how to do construction. Anyway, long story even longer. I was doing some occasional dates with a singer named Susan Ashton, who was in that contemporary Christian pop realm with Amy Grant, kind of in that scene. Two or three times a year, she'd need an electric guitar player. So she called me, and on one of these gigs, the drummer and the piano player were from Martina's band. And they knew that they were going to be hiring a guitar player. And we kind of developed a rapport just from that one gig. So, you know, two, 3 months later, I found myself with the opportunity to audition for Martina's band.
Very cool, man. How did auditions go?
The auditions went great.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm I'm trying not to be a braggadocious person, but you know, it was a cattle call audition, and you know, they looked at 14 guitar players.
Yeah.
and I beat all the rest of them, and they're all, I know some of those guys, I know they can play. Some of them play better than I do, in my own opinion, But for whatever reason, I got the gig. So that's something I'm kind of proud of.
That's awesome, man. Very cool. How has her whole situation changed? Or really, forget about her situation. How has your role, if at all, changed over the years?
It really hasn't. My role in that band has always been, that Martina has always kind of been like, we're going to go out here and we're going to play these songs, and I want them to sound as much like the record as they possibly can. So it's a gig. It's not about improvisation. It's about execution of parts.
Sure.
Succinctly and I think what Martina and I always get along, because I always try to take it to the next level. I want to play the solos with a live kind of presence that sometimes is not there on the records, because sure. I don't play on the records.
Sure.
So, you know, that's my role, to try to take those parts that are on the records and, you know, stick them up somebody's ass.
Did you, I think a guy I talked to recently said he was playing with Martina at the Ryman. Was there a guy, Johnny Lamb, from Brooklyn? I don't know how he even got the gig. He was telling me, I recently played. I was like, really? He's a slide guitar. I mean, a steel guitar player. I don't know how.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I know you've interviewed Harry Smith, and Harry's in Martina's band now,
right,
too.
Right. Yeah. I interviewed Harry a while back.
But I don't know. Martina's steel guitar player now is Kyle Everson.
Yeah.
But who knows? There might have been something that Martina did that I wasn't a part of.
Yeah. Okay. I think it was a one off. Yeah. So I know that. So let's talk about, you sent me a few tracks to listen to, and I wanted to talk about some of them. The first song was The Other Side. And, my first comment was, great vocals, man. Are you singing on those?
Yeah.
Dude, your voice is really cool.
Oh, well, thank you, man. That's not something I hear very often.
Really?
Yeah.
No, your voice was great, man. I hate to use this word Americana, but it reminded me of, because, you know, when I was a kid, there was no Americana, and not that I shouldn't resist it, but I do. It sounded like Eagles, Jimmy Buffett stuff, which to me is rock. You know, California rock, or, you know, whatever. It's rock. It's soft rock, but it's like, now it's Americana. And there was some like real good pentatonic fills in the background. And I was curious, is there a backstory to that song?
Well, the only backstory to that song is that it had been knocking around in my head it's one of those songs that was kind of knocking around in my head for several years before I actually one day just decided to record it. And, beyond that, there's really not that much to it. I've tried to figure out what the song means, and I don't even know. I think it's kind of just basically a love song.
Yeah.
But no, it's just one of those things. You know, as a songwriter, sometimes things just come to your head, and that one just stayed in there and knocked around there for literally several years before I recorded it.
Had you written it down though, once it like came to you, so you could?
No, a lot of times I didn't have the verses. So what I'll do a lot of times is I'll just go into my studio and I'll just, you know, put together a drum machine loop or something like that, and I'll just kind of start building something.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the lyrics are the last things to come on there. All I had was take me to the other side, whatever that means. You know, maybe we're all looking for something. Grass is always green.
Yeah, man. I was just thinking of that when you said that. Fish and Blues, again, great vocals, like a funky sort of bayou blues, I thought. And great harmonica and slide. And was that you on that?
That's me on slide. That's Mike Henderson on harmonica. I was a long time ago, and I kind of knew Mike, but I had just enough balls to ask him to come over and play harp on a couple of my tunes, and that's him on. And Mike's a musical hero of mine, as well as a good friend.
Sounds great. Do you know Greg Martin from the Headhunters?
Greg Martin for years.
Man, talk about one of the nicest human beings on the planet. That guy is just sweet as anything. He told me, he said, Mike Henderson is probably one of the greatest blues players I've ever heard. And that's a lot from Greg, who's a pretty damn good blues player himself, you know?
He is.
Yeah.
He is. Well, and I would agree.
That's cool.
I would agree. I when I first came to Nashville before I moved here, and one of the reasons I moved here is, like I said, this manager that we were working with took us to the Bluebird on a Monday night, and there was a band there called the Kingsnakes, and it was Mike Henderson and Kenny Greenberg on guitar, Glenn Wharf on bass, James Stroud was playing drums, Wally Wilson was playing piano, and it was just like, you know, it's a jaw-dropping kind of a thing. Yeah. And it's like I told you before, it's like, this is where I want to be. Yeah. I want to be around these guys. Yeah. And Mike and Kenny have both remained two of my favorite guitar players in the world and also are good friends. Yeah. And I feel extremely lucky that I have that.
That's cool, man. And then another song, Suicide Bomber, man. I thought the lyrics were really intense. And the chord
change. By the way, let me go back. I wanted to make one point about Fishing Blues.
Yeah.
Fishing Blues was one of those things where I had the riff. I had some studio time. And over 2 days, we recorded a bunch of songs. And I had that riff going in the studio, the whole music of the song we recorded one day. But I didn't have any lyrics to go with it. So I tried a couple of different things. And I was listening to Taj Mahal at the time. And Taj had that song, you know, Bet you gone fishing all of the time, a baby going fishing too. He had a fishing blues song. I said, well, I think I need to have.
Let me see that guitar, man. What is that? What do you put? Come on. Is that a 170? It's a 135. How is that different?
135.
That's a beautiful guitar. So let me describe it. It's a Sunburst. That's an older guitar, right?
I just got this. It basically, if you look at the front of it, it looks just like an ES-175.
Yeah, I was going to ask
you. It's a thinner body.
That is really cool because I'd like to get a 175, but it's too thick for me. So that would be the one. Is that totally hollow or semi?
No, it's semi hollow. It's got a block of balsa through the middle of it.
I got to write this down now. I may have to. You might be causing me.
Yeah, this is my new acquisition, and I love it.
ES-139, yeah.
135.
135, sorry, thank you.
So anyway, then I just started writing that Fishing Blues lyric, and that's how that ended up like that. Suicide Bomber.
That's intense, man.
Yeah.
Those lyrics are intense. But you know what I really was thought? I'll turn it over to you. The chord changes were great in there, man. That was not, it reminded me like Elton John or Beatles, because you don't usually see chord changes like that. The melody was just like, I thought it was really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And it was
that's one of those, a song that I remember I was cutting the grass. the melody started coming into my mind. And that melody to me is a yes melody. And we haven't touched on this yet, but when I was, 13, 14 years old and really starting to turn that corner where I wanted to practice all the time, and I became attracted to the really, really technically oriented great rock guitar players at the time. For me back then, it was Steve Howe. So I got really into Yes.
Yeah,
early period of Yes, like, you know.
He's great. I mean, I saw him live about 5 years ago. It was crazy. I mean, it was crazy to see that.
I'm talking back like 70, 71, 72, 73, Fragile, Close to the Edge, that era. So anyway, that to me was a John Anderson melody that was in my head. And I just went in my studio and started screwing around with it. And how it got from there to being a song about suicide bombers, I don't know. I don't know. That just kind of happened that day. But that's a lot of people's, that's as much as I can have a hit, that's a hit for me. People gravitate to that song.
Yeah, well, it's a different take on the subject.
Well, I just for the life of me can't understand what kind of a world somebody would live in where somebody can coerce you into strapping a bunch of C4 onto yourself and go blow yourself up. It's just.
Now, those are good salespeople, man.
They
are. I'm a good sales guy, but I don't think I'm that good.
I just don't understand it.
I know, man. There's lots of shit going on I don't understand.
Yeah.
Are you working on anything that you're excited about?
I'm working on several projects, which is why I haven't put anything out in a while. We'll start with, you know, I've actually got a guy coming over here today to cut a song. You know, the typical records that I put out are like the songs that you've been mentioning lately. I kind of put them in that, you know, if the record store, well, if there were record stores.
For you millennials listening.
If music was subdivided even more, if there was a section that had like old Clapton in the band, in old Van Morrison, I kind of see myself being in that same section
totally
musically. So I have another record that is typical of the records that I've put out that I don't know whether I'm going to put it out or not. Why? I just don't know. It's expensive. And, you know, anymore live, I have about 5 or 6 places that I'll go play and I don't know. I just don't know if I'll put another record like that out. I have another project that I'm working on with that band that I was in the late 80s and early 90s called the Hammerheads. That was a really successful thing for that time. And luckily, when we parted ways, you know, we were still friends. That's and cool. We've kind of kept that friendship going. And through a comedy of errors, we started recording a record about 3 or 4 years ago, and that's on the home stretch, as they say in Louisville, Kentucky. Hmm. So that's kind of keeping me busy trying to get that one wrapped up, mixed, mastered, and we'll put that out and we'll play some gigs to promote that.
Do you do all the mixing and mastering, or you work with
someone? No.
That? Yeah, okay. No.
I have mixed some of my own things before, but I've got some mixer guys now that I use, so I try to have professionals mix my records before I put them out now.
No, I hear you, man. It's a lot of people do the whole thing, and I'm like, man, that's a lot.
If I knew how to get drum sounds, I would probably continue to mix my own things, but it's just making the drum sound right is challenging to me. But then, I sent you a couple of these. I've also been working on kind of an instrumental jazz fusion guitar oriented record that I am going to put out.
Great.
That's the next thing that I put out will be that, which is quite a diversion from everything I've done up to this point, but I'm excited about it.
Very cool. Would you think you'll play
excited
out?
Excited about going out and playing gigs and playing way too many notes.
Yeah. So would you do that like with a trio or something?
No, I'd want a quartet at least. I like having a piano player and I like having a sax player too.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of moving parts, man. You grew up in Louisville. What was your childhood like, man?
My childhood was awesome. The first 5 years of my life, I actually grew up in an area of Louisville called Valley Station, which is I'm glad I didn't stay there. You just put it that way. It's almost halfway between Louisville and Fort Knox, and my father ended up there because he ended up being stationed at Fort Knox. My mom and dad got divorced when I was really young, and my mom moved us to a neighborhood called the East End of Louisville, the Highlands, and it was just a wonderful place to grow up. It's idyllic, you know, to grow up in a single parent home. It was me and my older brother and my mom, but I loved it.
Yeah.
And I had a great time. I've always had a good time in life, Craig.
That's good.
I think part of that is just the way God made me. I'm always having fun pretty much wherever I'm at. And when my childhood was pretty idyllic to me.
That's great, man. I think that's actually a skill set, to be honest with you.
I think I don't like to take any credit for it. I think it's you're lucky to, you know, you're just born a certain nature versus nurture. Who knows? You know
sure.
what I mean?
Sure.
I didn't grow up wealthy in any stretch of the imagination. I mean, it was a small home, working class neighborhood.
Sure.
And my mom worked her butt off to raise me and my brother. But it was great. She let us practice in the basement.
Oh, your brother's a player also?
No. Me and my bands.
Oh, you and your band.
By the time we were 13, 14 years old, I'd have all the kids that I could find, that, you know, a drummer and a bass player, and we'd go down, set up in the basement. And my mom put up with it.
Very cool, man. What are some of the bigger obstacles that you've had to deal with throughout, you know, your career journey and stuff that you've had to overcome, either music related, business, personal?
You know, that's a tough one. You know, the one thing that comes to mind is like in the '80s when I was still living in Louisville, and back then you could put a band together and you didn't really have to be all that good. You could put a band together and you could play three or four sets of cover music. You could go play music in these clubs, and there was a bunch of them. Hmm. Like there was a couple of different circuits. Like the bands that I were in would be in these top 40 circuits, and we'd have 8 or 10 clubs, and we just hit them, and all year long we'd make a living. And then there was a whole another circuit of clubs that were harder rocks. You know, the AC/DC bands would play. But then what happened was Mothers Against Drunk Drivers came and created a whole new section of the police force where they would just park outside of the clubs that we were playing.
Holy shit.
Start arresting people for coming out of the clubs with a couple of, and I'm not editorializing about that one way or the other, because I understand Mothers sure. like Drunk Drivers are doing great work. It's just odd that it put an end to the industry that I made a living in.
So it basically shut all the clubs down for lack of
over a period of time. Wow. That whole industry is gone to this day.
Sure.
Those clubs don't exist anymore. There are still, you know, there's just a few clubs that will hire bands, usually on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate is that they're paying about the same as they did 30 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I was talking to someone recently, and they were saying someone famous, Steve Van Zandt, someone played at their high school prom or something, and it came down, he made $700. I'm like, shit, that's more money than you get today to play at the prom, man. I was like, oh, my God. That's terrible.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that wasn't really an obstacle for me, because I had kind of moved, you know, I moved on. I got in that band, the Hammerheads, and it was really, really successful. We made good money. And then I kind of moved to Nashville and started playing with country artists. I've always felt like I've been really lucky. Mm-hmm. So when you ask me about obstacles, and, you know, maybe it's my attitude towards life, but, you know,
sure.
For me, like, there's been a yellow brick road laid down before me, and I've just kind of tried to stay on it.
Well, brother, good for you, man. Stay on it and don't step off and don't think too much. That's awesome. Was there any advice that you would have given to your younger self that you would have benefited from?
Advice?
Yeah, like advice that you would have benefited from if you were open to hearing it. What advice?
Yeah, I definitely would have started, you know, when I started my band, the Greg Forsman Band, and started singing my own songs, I didn't start doing that till I was 32 years old. If I could go back and do it all over again, I would do that from the get-go. And it's just a matter about having control over your own music.
Sure.
Complete control over your own musical destiny.
And you're good with that.
Yeah, well, it took me a long time, but yeah.
No, that's a super important thing to me too. I've worked for myself for 20 years, and there is ups and downs. And I think as an entrepreneur, you take a risk, but to me, it's a much greater risk putting my destiny in someone else's hands.
Absolutely.
You know, it makes me
absolutely
nothing wrong with it. It's just, for me, it just makes me uncomfortable. You know,
You're in Florida, right?
Yeah. I'm in Tampa.
How's the weather down there?
It's getting nicer. Thank God, man. It's breaking. It's not disgusting out. So that's what I'd call it. Not disgusting. So it's in the right direction. You know, we're headed in the right direction. It was a brutal, you know, brutal summer.
Oh, you got a Bukowski poster too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love him. You know,
I do too.
I love, man, I don't care what people say. He's very, talk about emotions.
Yeah.
I mean, he's as guttural as a writer can be. you know. And what's cool is I turned my son, my older son, on to him. So he likes, he reads Bukowski as well. So I love his stuff. It's just, I find it, it's nice and simple. And it's, to me, it's perfect writing. When you can be that emotional and that simple, man, what, I mean, that's the best writing you can, you know, every, your mass market, everybody understands it. You know, you don't need to have like a super advanced intellect or it's not technical. I think that's beautiful stuff, man.
Me too.
How'd you get turned on to him?
I don't remember. I don't remember. It must have been that some older kids I was running around with when I was young, the same guys that turned me on to Tom Waits. For some reason, I put Tom Waits and Bukowski together. So I don't really remember. I think maybe I just started buying his books.
Interesting.
Long time ago.
Post Office? You started with Post Office probably?
No, I had a book called Pulp.
Yeah.
Ham on Rye.
Ham on Rye is great.
A lot of them are – I haven't opened them in a while. Some of them are just – collections of poetry, and some of them are actual stories.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. One of them was almost seemed like it was almost a biographical, autobiographical in some ways.
Post Office. That was his first novel. That was autobiographical.
Was it? Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good one. Hey, man, let's talk gear for a few minutes.
Yeah.
What's your go-to guitar right now, and what other two guitars of yours would round out your top three? And I'm talking about not session stuff that you got to use, stuff that, you know, that you like to play.
Well, it's all kind of the same for me. I have a 19. I'm an ES-335 nut.
I saw your 335. Oh, I love it.
You know, I have a 61 ES-335.
Wow.
ES-345. I'm sorry. But you know, the Veritone's disconnected and it's not stereo. So it basically is set up like a 335 that I love. You know, it just plays and sounds great. And I have a black Strat that doesn't have a Fender part on it. It's a Frankenstein Strat that, you know, it's a really good one. But man, it's over 30 years I've been playing that guitar.
Wow, that's awesome.
Over 30 years, 30 plus years. What I say to people is I've been making money with that for, you know, 35 years or something like that.
That's great.
And it's a favorite. It's a really good Strat. I have a few Telecasters that I like. I have a custom made Gaines Telecaster. Steve Gaines out of Texas made this for me. I have a feeling that Fender has shut him down because he's kind of disappeared, but boy, that's a great Telecaster. Paul Reed Smith makes some great guitars. Paul Reed Smith came to town, you know, several years ago and started, you know, giving us people that had gigs. They just kind of make us whatever guitar we wanted. And they make some great guitars. But that 335 and that black Strat are my, you know, they have a special place in my heart, you know.
What are you playing them through usually?
Well, when I'm with Martina, I play through a Dr. Z, actually a Dr. Z Carmen Ghia head.
Oh, wow. I got
it. It's got volume and tone.
I don't know if you could see that. You see
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But I gotta sell that, man. It's way overkill. It's a Maz scene. It's 38 watts. It might as well be 5,000 watts, man. I don't
You should check out a Carmen Ghia. It's 18 watts. It's kind of based like off of Vox AC-15, I think. Yeah, I got a KT-45 that I don't get to use that much either.
Yeah.
And when I play in around clubs, it's usually a Blackface Deluxe Reverb, you know, a mid-60s Deluxe Reverb or a mid-60s Princeton Reverb. But lately, and I'm just going to go ahead and admit it, when I do sessions, all I do is take my Kemper.
Yeah, that's becoming more and more. I mean, it's just the way the world.
I mean, that Kemper sounds wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. No, a lot of guys moved it. Just if nothing else, for convenience, man. I mean, not to lug shit around is like nice.
Well, once again, Kenny Greenberg, uh, K- Kenny Greenberg's the first one that, to tell me about the Kemper.
Hmm.
And if it's, you know, I trust Kenny. Hold on, I'm going to let my dog out.
Oh, yeah, sure, man. You ever sell a guitar you wish you could get it back?
Well, let me tell you about a couple of them. And like I said, I've always been into 335s. And the first one that I got when I was about 16 or 17 years old.
Wow. That's a great guitar to have as a
kid. And it was a great guitar, and I loved it. And then, I first went on the road when I was 17, and I was about 18, and that guitar got stolen.
Oh, man.
And, oh, man, that I was completely and totally heartbroken. And still to this day, I'm heartbroken about that and mad at a couple of guys I was in the band with. And I'll always be mad at them. But, yeah, then later on, years later, and this is kind of funny, I bought a 59 ES355 non-Veritone, non-stereo from the factory. I mean, this was a beautiful, beautiful guitar, 355. And I played it for a couple of years, and I sold it because I wanted to buy a Camaro.
that's so funny. That is a real funny that you sold it for a Camaro. That's
I wish
awesome.
I would have. Yeah. And that Camaro was a piece of shit.
You know, I'm interviewing. Do you remember, you know who Ricky Medlock is from Blackfoot?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I know who he is.
I got him coming on the show soon, and I'm going to ask him about this, but I was told he plays on stage with a 59 Flying V and a 59 Les Paul. And I got to ask him about it. Apparently, he just can't. That's his thing, man. He doesn't want to play anything else. But the thing with Ricky is he seems like larger than life. Like he seems to be the kind of guy, like if you ever stole his guitar, you'd get it. The pain that you'd eventually have to go through is going to be a lot worse than any profit you might make. He just has that presence about him. So
yeah.
I want to ask him about it. Desert Island Discs, no particular order. Just for today. I know it could change tomorrow. Top three.
Well, top three, This is so hard.
I know.
Well, I mean, you know, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue.
Mm-hmm. Very popular choice.
So you're sure.
You're a jazzer then at heart.
I would say I love all music. I really do. I love all music. I would say that for the last 15 or 20 years, it has been my field of study.
Great.
You know, it's kind of what I'm still, you know, it's kind of what I've attached myself to in my later years to what the field that I'm going to go into to try to keep getting better.
Now I understand
it's so difficult. Yeah.
Now I understand the instrumental that coming out.
Yeah.
Now it's making sense. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I would put a Yes record in there. Probably that Yes songs, the three live Yes songs records that they put out when they were touring for Close to the Edge.
Yep.
Even though I never listened to it anymore, but it was so influential to me as a kid. And man, from there, I mean, it might be Joni Mitchell Blue.
It comes up often.
Oh, then you got to put Steely Dan. There's got to be
a Countdown to Ecstasy. So
take the Yes record. Put Asia on there. Maybe Two Against Nature. I don't know.
Oh, that's funny. I love old Steely Dan, man. Their first three, four, five records just set the bar for, you know, sitting with your headphones and just like, what?
Yeah.
Most important things you've learned about yourself career-wise and through life over your journey?
Well, I think the most important what you have to learn to do is believe in yourself. You know, you know what I'm talking about here. You know, believe in yourself. But you know, if you get an idea and people around you are saying, man, that's not a good idea, that's not a good idea, screw them. If you feel strongly about it, follow that. Follow your heart. Follow your guide. And if it turns out to be wrong, you know, learn your lesson and move on.
Yeah. And you've done that pretty much, it seems like, throughout your career.
Not always. Not always. It took me a while to learn that, but I would say for the last 20, 25 years, yeah.
Good for you.
I have.
All right. This is a tough question. What do you like most about yourself?
Well, like I said, I don't take any credit. I've never had a problem. Once again, this is going to sound a little pretentious maybe, but I've never really had a problem with myself. I've always liked myself okay. I have some faults.
God bless you, man.
And I know what they are. And but I feel like, you know, if your basic philosophy is to love people and be generous to humankind, then you just follow that and everything will be okay. I'm sorry.
Man, it's okay. Man, thank you for being so honest. I mean, that's like, thank you, man. Where did you get that from, man? I'm so like impressed with that. I know you said it's the way you're made, but
it is. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, God kind of makes you the way you are, but I think I've always been, my sense of spirituality has always been very important to me. Hmm. And I'm also kind of an observer of human nature and of humankind. And I've just walked away thinking that, you know, if you go through your life and you do as much as you can for other people, then you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, man, the more it's weird, like the more positive you put out there, the more
you get.
Well, the more at ease you are too. I used to be very angry, like, cause I had a tough childhood and I was really angry. And then I just said, man, I think this is all up to me. And I just said, I've got to stop being an asshole. I probably tougher on myself thinking, because I really wasn't an asshole. I was just angry. And I said, I've got to like fake it for a while until it becomes reality. And then I just started like just really, then that was my number one thing, man. Just put good shit out there. Just be nice. Just that was it. Just be nice. And I cannot tell you over like a 5-year period of life, my whole life turned around.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was just like so much less stress. All that anger I had was gone. And I realized something told me, I said, man, nothing's going to, you've got to change this because nothing, you can't go backwards. You got to, you know, or keep, you know, having all this shit inside of you. And I'm like, I was done. It was like around, you know, 8-9 years ago, pretty much. And I was like, I'm done. You know, it was like when I stopped biting my nails one day, I just said, I'm done. And I stopped biting my, you know, it was the same thing as that. I just, you know, hit that point and I did exactly what you're talking about. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
man.
It works. Thank you.
Thank you.
Best childhood memory.
Well, as relating to this conversation, I have this great memory of when I was like 3 years old, and my Aunt Jan came to visit, my Aunt Jan from upstate New York, and she took me and my brother out to the store. You know, she's going to buy us a toy. And I remember I didn't run, but I knew exactly where I was going. It was a toy guitar, molded plastic, charcoal molded plastic back and sides, cream colored molded plastic top, and red plastic strings. And then there's this memory that I have of, you know, like I said, we weren't wealthy, but there was this place where my mom would take me and my brother to go swimming. It was like a kind of a country club in South Louisville. And I took my guitar with me. It's a long story, but, you know, I wasn't at the pool. And there was like far away, there was this band set up and playing, and they found me over, standing in front of the band in the audience, but playing along with them on my plastic red guitar.
That's so cool.
When I was about 3 years old.
That's awesome, man. Is your mom still around?
On that, yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
you get to, so you see, you get to see her once in a while.
Yeah, I go up to Louisville and check on her and my dad.
That's great. How far is Louisville? It's only about an hour, right?
No, it's 3 hours.
Oh, it's 3 hours. Wow.
Yeah.
I was talking to Greg. He must not live in Louisville.
He lives in Glasgow.
Oh, that's what it is.
But he used to live in Louisville. I mean, I've known Greg, like I said, since I was at least 20 or something like that. He's a little bit older than me, but I've known him for a long time. We actually played in a band together for a minute before he put together the Greg Martin band. I would go up there and sing with him, and it was a lot of fun.
He's touring now. I mean, not like extensively, but the Greg Martin band was touring. They were just down at Acme in Nashville.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. I saw that. So
that's right.
I interviewed him, and we became friends. We speak like once a month, and I've seen him two or three times since our interview. We just had a good connection. He's
a great guy, man. Oh,
he was so cool. He was down here, and you know, my wife and I went to the show, and man, he gave, you know, we got tickets, of course, but I'm standing on the side of the stage. It was like a guitar clinic, man. I was like right in front of his amp all night long. I was like, holy crap, this is a blessing almost, you know, to just sit here and listen.
I love his pedal board.
Oh, I know. Zero.
It's a cord.
He actually had a wah that night, and he was like feeling guilty. He's like, Craig, you know, I don't normally have something. I just took the wah. I'm like, are you kidding me, man? I said, you're the tone king as far as I'm concerned,
know.
Man. Don't worry about anything. Most important person in your life?
Man, I would have to say my mom.
Very cool, man.
You know, if you look at the whole thing.
And congratulations. You told me you're getting ready to have a grandchild.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man. Very good. Congratulations on that.
Well, you know what? Maybe I need to back up and say my wife.
Hint, hint, wink, wink.
Certainly in the last 30 years. I've been married 30 years.
So, oh, have you, man?
My wife is awfully important to me. I have two wonderful sons that are awfully important to me. So,
30 years is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Tell me about it.
Good for you, man. Congratulations to both of y'all. And I'll tell Mrs. Forsman a special congratulations.
Thank you.
Any hobbies or interests outside of music, Greg?
Yeah. I tell you, lately, for years I've been threatening to get into painting.
Oh yeah.
So I've just started that. You know, I like riding my I have a motorcycle that I get to get out and ride every once in a while.
What kind of painting are you doing? Like what media? What
pictures?
Like watercolor or oil paint?
I'm starting with acrylics.
Very cool, man.
Just because we have some around the house. My wife used to paint too, so we have these, you know, acrylic sets that have just been sitting around here for years, and so I've been getting them out a little bit. I have this vision of myself as an old man playing jazz and painting, and you know,
perfect.
Doing artistic types of things, you know, in my golden years.
Yeah, man.
So I'm trying to prepare for that.
Good for you. It's a
vibe. None of which makes any money, but that's okay.
Well, I'm telling you this, I draw and I don't draw enough, but with pencils, it's very, I'm sure painting's the same. It's incredibly relaxing, man.
It really is. I found myself last night just on YouTube watching some instructional videos because I'm trying to get some, you know, I wanted to find out how people did one particular thing. So I got wrapped up in all these instructions, watching these artists give lessons on YouTube, which was really interesting to me last night.
That's cool, man. So motorcycle painting, anything else?
I'm trying to think. No, not really. I mean, I hike a lot.
You're in a great place for it, man.
I know. I like to go hiking. I started the Appalachian Trail a couple of years ago, so I like to do those types of things as well.
I smell a song, bro.
Yeah.
Hey,
probably,
man.
Several.
Yeah, for sure. You can't do any hiking in Florida, I can tell you that much. Three more questions, man, and I really appreciate your time. This has been great. And they're all tough, though. Can you talk about a specific experience that changed your life or altered the way you think about things?
You know, this is one I probably should have thought about, because nothing, let me think. Specific experience. Well, I can't think, Craig, of one particular thing that happened to me that changed me in any way. I can say moving to Nashville, when I think about how that's affected my life, I'm just glad I moved. That's all I can say. I'm glad I moved, and I'm glad I moved to Nashville.
Good, man.
You know, other than that, you know, I mean, you know, the day your children are born are the most special days you'll ever have. You know, there was no big incident. There was no, you know, nothing like that I can think of.
That's good.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it is. Most important lesson your business has taught you.
Once again, I have to go back to do what you think you should be doing, not what other people think you should be doing. And you know, take some risks every once in a while, for crying out loud.
Man, you got to. You got to. If you're going to take the conservative road, and it's hard to grow.
Yeah. Like what you're doing. You know, I'm not out to be a millionaire, but to be successful, you know, I don't know. I think I might have read this on Facebook or something, that 90% of really successful monetarily, they all own their own business.
Yeah. Or real estate or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. But you own your own business.
Well, I do.
Yeah,
I do.
It's the same thing.
I'm not rich, but I'm happy.
Yeah, but you own your own. I mean, and I think a lot of people don't realize that for some reason. I don't know why, but you're an entrepreneur. You're a musician. And I mean, no one's cutting you a check unless you're creating something.
That's right.
You know,
that's
right. And that's going to be that way forever. And, you know, but yeah, I'm not really employable, to be honest with you. I'm not a, I don't like being told what to do. You know, I'm not a control freak. Like, I don't have a thing about telling others what to do, but I just don't like being told what to do. And I'm really motivated, so it's not necessary. So, you know, I'm pretty driven. So,
yeah. Well, this thing you're doing here is great.
Man, I've done a lot of projects over the last 20 plus years since I've been working for myself. By far, this is the most fun.
All right.
It's by far the most fun in every way. I've learned a ton about myself. I've changed. I mean, I've just met some wonderful people. Man, where else can I have the conversations, like real conversations like this? Right? I mean,
that's true.
That's like not a bad gig.
Yeah.
and free concert tickets.
And if Martina's ever around, I hope you'll hit me up.
I will for sure. It'd be good to connect in person. Last question. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, Greg, and how much of the change has been deliberate and intentional, and how much is just a part of aging?
Well, I don't know. You might have to ask my wife that question. Like I said, I've always been a very, you know, I know myself pretty well, and I'm always, you know, the type of person that's really just pretty affable. I get along with just about everybody, even people, you know, that I disagree with philosophically and politically.
Sure.
I do find myself getting, without even getting into this, I mean, you know, there's a big wedge in this country right now. We're very divided. And I'm pretty squarely on my side. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I find myself getting more and more irritated about the country in the direction that it's going in right now. That's what I got to work on. Really, I mean, I'm still going to be kind of this happy-go-lucky guy that gets along with everybody and tries to love everybody.
That's awesome, man. Hey, let me tell people where to find you. And thank you very much for everything, man. This is really cool, Greg. Man. This is really cool. Yeah. Everybody, check out Greg's plane. It's Greg Foresman, Foresman. A few things. His last album was called Chautauqua.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Chautauqua, and it's available on CD Baby and all of his stuff. There's links to everything on gregforesman.com. He also does tracks, and he's a great player, man. You have a lot of videos with your 335. That's what I checked out because.
Sweet.
I love it. I was just showing Greg my 335, and he also gives lessons. And so if you want to study with Greg, either in person or on Skype, you could find him online, either in the contact form of his webpage or on social media, and just reach out to him and obviously be respectful of his time and that kind of stuff. So, but he's a great player and extremely talented songwriter as well. So, man, any final words of wisdom?
No, just, thank you. Thanks for contacting me and
thank you.
Appreciate
man.
It.
Ditto. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thanks again to Greg Foresman for spending time with us. Please go check out Greg online at gregforesman.com and make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar and have fun. Till next time. Peace and love, everybody. I'm out. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.
Business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.